Understanding Latin American Politics, the podcast. I am Greg Weeks. I'm a political scientist at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. And today, I'm very pleased to be talking to Ana Isabel López García. She's assistant professor at El Colegio de la Frontera Norte in Tijuana. She does research on Latin American democratization and political institutions, and in particular, she recently published an article on corporate organizations and political parties in Mexico in the Latin Americanist, which is the journal I edit. So, Ana, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for inviting me. Very pleased to be here.
Now, my first question is one that I always ask of everybody, and that is, what first got you interested in studying Latin American politics?
That's a very good question. I was born and raised in Mexico, and my childhood and teenage years, spent my childhood and teenage years in the midst of profound economic, social, and political changes in my country. And I wanted to understand those changes better and contribute positively to political change in my country. And that's why I major in Mexican politics, and because I wanted to understand Mexico in a comparative perspective, I end up doing a master's in Latin American studies.
Okay. And do you think in Mexico, is there do academics have much of a public profile? I mean, do you have the ability to sort of, have a public presence in the press or talk to policymakers and that sort of thing?
I think in Mexico they have something called comentocracy, mm-hmm. which is those academics who often appear in TV shows or publish in newspapers. And they are not very well respected, actually.
Okay.
Because they said, like, oh, you are into activism. But I think that's very, I don't think that's a fair accusation or a judgment, because you cannot be in academia all the time and just publishing without any purpose.
Right. So I don't know. I think that's very similar in the United States. Now, thinking more specifically about your article, can you just briefly describe how did corporatism work in Mexico from 1929 to 2000, which, of course, is when the PRI was in the presidency?
Okay, so Mexico is an interesting case in Latin America as well, because it had a one-party based authoritarianism for 70 years. And this authoritarian regime was underpinned by the subordination and dependence of sectoral organizations, including labor unions, the peasantry, and popular associations to the hegemonic party, and therefore to the Mexican state. Mm-hmm. In this corporatist arrangement, organizations were kept in line through a series of legal provisions, like the federal labor law, which allowed the government to sanction the registration of new organizations. The government could impose restrictions on protest activity. It could control the selection of leaders. And it also had jurisdictions over internal affairs, among other things. In exchange, the leaders of these organizations were warranted political representation, policy influence, and access to state subsidies and welfare services. And in order to receive the material benefits that the state was providing to these organizations, the rank and file had to follow the orders of the leaders, mm-hmm. And this include voting and political mobilization all to the benefit of the PRI, and therefore the authoritarian regime. So this corporatist structure allowed the PRI to remain in power for seven decades overall, controlling dissidents and cementing loyalties within the Mexican electorate. But to be effective, this corporatist structure requires sustained economic growth and heavy state intervention in the economy. So from the 1940s until the 1980s, the Mexican economy grew over 6% annually, inflation was low, and employment increased. economic growth allowed this organization, this corporatist structure to function, but eventually in the 1980s, as many of us know, Mexico experienced a series of macroeconomic crises, and therefore the ability of this structure to be effective decreased significantly.
And so tell me a little bit about that. So how much did the economic reforms in the 1980s and beyond contribute to the loosening of those ties between corporate organizations and the PRI?
Because of this series of economic crises that Mexico was experiencing in the 1980s, the governments of Miguel de la Madrid and Carlos Salinas implemented a series of draconian measures, including cutting governmental subsidies, keeping salaries low, and most importantly, economic liberalization was adopted as a new development strategy of the country. As Mexico opened up its economy, technocrats within the party began to expand their influence, and leaders of corporatist organizations were increasingly excluded from political representation and therefore from the formulation of the party programs and government policies. Therefore, the ability of this of the leaders of these organizations to influence policy or to distribute benefits to the rank and file diminished dramatically. Also, during this period of time, the rank and file of these organizations were suffering from wage austerity, unemployment, and cuts to social services. And because of all these things, inevitably, corporatist organizations underwent a process of delegitimation in the eyes of their members. So I would say that economic restructuring, besides delegitimizing the corporatist organizations and the authoritarian structure, it also provided the impetus and incentives for a large number of people to mobilize against the government, join dissident or form independent organizations, and electorally support opposition parties.
Okay, and that's interesting because as you were talking, I was thinking about how those reforms then contributed really to the end of the PRI's hold on power. They were almost creating their own destruction because the reforms weakened the ties that were actually giving them votes.
Yeah.
In the article, can you explain your argument about what affects why the corporatist organizations can maintain influence or not?
Okay, so one thing that we should mention is these organizations were no longer effective in providing votes to the PRI. And as you mentioned, this contributed to the demise of one-party rule in Mexico. However, after the PRI was unseated for the first time from the presidency in 2000, the ties between these organizations remain. So the corporatist structure, in formal terms, remain in place. So in this paper, what I'm trying to explore is how the demise of one-party rule affected the political partnerships of these organizations, of PRI-affiliated organizations. Because obviously the unseating of the PRI from the presidency left these organizations to their own devices regarding securing access to state resources and policy-making influence. So in order to explore this, I look at three cases, which are the National Farm Workers Confederation, the National Teachers Unions, and the Confederation of Mexican Workers. And these three organizations had the same objective after the end of authoritarianism in Mexico, which was to preserve the political influence and access the state resources to the rank and file and to the leadership. However, despite they have the same goal and they were long bulwarks of the authoritarian regime, these organizations have pursued very different strategies to achieve this goal. So I explore why accounts for these differences. And I find the answer in two variables. One was the extent to which the organization in question was relevant for advancing and implementing the agenda of the new political of the new party in government, and two, the ability of this organization to loosen its formal ties from the PRI. So my analysis is limited from to the period of 2000 and 2012, which covers the first two non-PRI presidencies of Vicente Fox and Felipe Calderón. So obviously, my argument might not hold for, I mean, after the PRI returned to the presidency.
Okay, and then I was going to get to that in a minute, but so out of the National Farm Workers Confederation, National Teachers Union, and the Confederation of Mexican Workers, so which one of those has been the most successful in maintaining influence? Like what are the best strategies?
Okay, so I would say that it depends how we measure the success of an organization. So if we only consider the ability to influence policy making, well, we will say that the teachers' unions and the workers' unions were very effective in precluding the reform of authoritarian laws and in maintaining the status quo in benefit of their leadership. But if we look at the ability of this organization to retain new member, to retain the membership and attract new ones, I would say the case of the Farm Workers Confederation has been the most successful, because even though this organization couldn't establish an alliance with the incumbent party because the PAN was supporting agribusiness sectors and relying on individual base assistance programs for cementing loyalties in the countryside, the ability of this organization to attract new members was remarkable. So for instance, after the PRI was unseated from the presidency, the leadership of this organization revised its procedure for leadership selection, removed the clause obliging members to actively campaign for the PRI. They readopted a discourse in favor of a state intervention in the economy and engaged in protests as the main form of making demands. And as a result of these changes, this organization was able to make inroads into the social movement sector in Mexico. They also established alliance with other opposition parties, especially the leftist ones, such as the PRD and Convergencia and even Morena. And although it has attracted new members, its leadership is considered now democratic, even though it was part of an authoritarian regime for so many decades. And although the ties with the PRI remain in place, it is still part of the structure of the party. This organization is now influenced the platform of the party, and in the past it was the other way around. So I think this strategy has been very successful, even though it wasn't this organization was unable to influence policy making. Because its leadership was legitimized in a way, and in the case of the CTM, which is the workers' union, it established an alliance with the party in government, but it continued losing members, and the organization is not even capable of sustaining itself financially. So it's very dependent of what it gets from the government or from other parties. The teachers' unions, on the other hand, is one of the largest unions in Latin America, teachers' unions in Latin America, and it had the financial capacity to sustain itself. I think it was it's very interesting the strategy pursued by this organization, because it created a party, a new party, to establish an alliance with the party in government, and at the same time, its leadership was able to establish alliance with other parties, especially from the left sector. But nonetheless, its leadership continued to be authoritarian. There are corruption accusations against its leadership. And overall, it's not considered a democratic union. So it depends how we measure the success of this organization. In my view, I think the farm workers or confederation was the most successful.
Okay, that's interesting, that question of measuring success, because then you can say that having an alliance with the ruling party might not actually be successful because you are being co-opted.
Exactly.
So you might be getting less, whereas if you can be more flexible, reach out to the PRD or whatever other party, you don't influence policy per se, but you might actually get more attention and more support.
Yes, and there are ways to influence policy, like protest activity.
Exactly.
Right?
It's just more indirect.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, you look at the Fox and Calderon presidencies. Have you paid attention, though? Like, does it seem like this dynamic is the same with Enrique Peña Nieto with the pre coming back to power?
So after the PE came back to power, many people thought that corporatism was going to get back together or to be back in place.
Right.
And this has not happened because I think, the most emblematic case is that of the teachers' union. So upon Peña Nieto took office in Mexico, the leader, the legendary leader of the teachers' union, El Vester Gordillo, she was arrested under corruption and accusations. So the idea of the Peña Nieto organization, and one of the main goals, was to promote educational reform. And one of the objectives of El Vester Gordillo was to preclude educational reform to happen because its leadership was maintained on the selling of job positions within the education sector. So everyone thought like this was the end of the corporatist structure in Mexico. And what was more paradoxical, it was this reform was undertaken by the PRI itself. However, if you examine closely what happened, the Peña Nieto government has relied heavily on the leadership of the teachers' union to quell dissidents to educational reform in Mexico. Mm. Key leaders, former leaders, authoritarian leaders, are now in charge of implementing this reform. And this reform has been, the time frame of this reform is very lax or very loose. So these leaders have been able to influence how this reform is going to happen to their benefit. And also various newspaper accounts suggest that the Peña Nieto government channeled lots of money to the teachers' unions so they could support this reform. So obviously, this suggests that probably the PRI is using the same tactics. It is not promoting democratic reform in a corporatist structure, which is what was underpinning authoritarianism in Mexico. Although, the teachers' unions is no longer supporting the PRI. So the teachers' unions, for instance, in the next presidential election, it has said that it's going to support other parties, that they have the ability to support other parties. The Farm Workers Confederation is saying the same thing. If the PRI is not good for us, we're going to support other parties. So this is an important change because in the past, these organizations were subordinated to the PRI. And even though it is now back in power and somehow they are, it's important for them to have an alliance with the party in government, they are saying that they are not going to support that party, that the balance of forces between organizations and political parties have changed. And the only workers, the only organization that is supporting the PRI is the workers' organization. But other than that, it's the teachers' unions and the farm workers. They say like, okay, we have an alliance with you, but if you don't do what we like you to do, we are gonna support other parties.
Right, which is good, right? I mean,
Yeah.
that's democratic.
But some of these organizations are not democratic internally.
Okay, yes, point taken, definitely. These days, how much do political parties in Mexico need the support of corporatist organizations? Do they court them? Sort of, how does that work now versus in the past?
Yes, they court them, and but I think the relationship goes both ways. The leadership of the teachers' union is contacting officials from different parties and asking them, do you want us to support you? What do you have to offer, etc. But I think the most important thing is like some of these organizations are still authoritarian. So even though Mexico, there's party competition in Mexico in a somehow level field. Corporatist organizations, many of them, and the majority of them, even those that are in the dissidents, remain authoritarian. Its leadership is barely renewed. The rank and filers are subordinated, etc. And this is because many laws have remained in place. So we have that, but these organizations are important to still mobilizing votes. So for instance, the peasant organizations can mobilize 5 million votes. The teacher organizations can mobilize more than 7 million votes. And that is particularly important in a context in which you have a fragmentation of the party system and electoral races are becoming very close. I mean, this inevitably makes necessary for parties to reach out to these organizations or to make alliances with them, electoral alliance, in order to win an election. In 2006, I remember they said that had it not been for the support of the teachers' unions, the PAN would have never gained the presidency.
Okay.
Felipe Calderón, sorry.
Right. And then just one last question. You mentioned the 5 million votes or the 7 million votes. Are these more authoritarian organizations able to really deliver all those votes? I mean, they say, hey, vote for this person, and the rank and file does it.
Yes, especially the teachers' unions. So they have a very interesting electoral machinery. So teachers convince the parents of children to vote for a particularly party, and usually some of the electoral booths are located in schools, in public schools. So teachers can monitor who votes for whom and why. And therefore punish or reward people accordingly. I think the more authoritarian, the most capacity they have. I should say that the CTM, the workers' unions, it remains very authoritarian, but it no longer has capacity to influence elections, and that is because the growth of the informal economy in Mexico. So an increasingly num a large number of people are not part of labor unions. So therefore this organization might not be as important as the others, as the teachers unions or the one from the countryside.
Right. Well, with that, we are out of time. I've been talking to Ana Isabel López García. She's assistant professor at El Colegio de la Frontera Norte in Tijuana. Ana, thank you again so much.
No, thank you, Greg. I hope this influence other or inspires other studies on the topic.